Hello, everyone. I'm Father Ray Petrucci. Welcome to Thoughts for the Week. You do not miss this program. Before I introduce our guest and my co-host with me today, I'd like to turn to you, our listeners. I'm going to ask you for a favor. Ask you to please consider reaching out to us, letting us know on Thoughts for the Week what topics or theories or things you'd like to talk about. Maybe you have some ideas for the program you'd like to share. Please do so. Let me give you two ways to reach us. First, by mail. Thoughts for the Week, that's where you address the envelope. Post Office Box 7466. Let me repeat that for you. That's Post Office Box 7466, Greenwich, Connecticut. The zip code in Greenwich is 06836. That's 06836. On the computer, like to email us instead, great. Do so at clemons10@aol.com. That's C-L-E-M-O-N-S, the number 10, at aol.com. While you're on the computer, I encourage you to go to our internet magazine, Spirituality for Today. You'll see some articles and features, but also our radio program, Thoughts for the Week. The address for our internet magazine, remember Spirituality for Today, is spirituality.org. That's spirituality.org. Very important. If you hit .com, you go somewhere else. So we hope that you please go ahead and do that. And now it's time to turn first to my co-host, Dorothy Riera. Welcome.
Hi, Father. Such a privilege to be here with our guests.
Indeed. This is an incredibly important program. Our guest, maybe one of the rare times, we actually have three guests today. First, I would like to welcome Aaron Neal. Now, Aaron has been with the diocese for a goodly number of years now. She is the Director of Safe Environments and Victim Assistance Coordinator. And they give us a little hint to our program today, which brings me on to a tremendous honor to welcome to Thoughts for the Week Jim DeVasto and Peggy Fry. Jim, Peggy, welcome.
Thank you, Father.
Thanks, Father.
Having us.
And our topic is the very serious and tragic topic of clergy sex abuse, and also the hopeful topic of what positive and healing things are being done throughout the church, especially in the diocese now. Both Jim and Peggy are victims of clergy sexual abuse. Your story is really heart-rending. We have so much to cover. I would like our listeners, if they did not hear an earlier program, to please maybe hear your story a little bit today, maybe get a little sketch of that, and then we could go into other areas that touch on your experience now.
Sure. Thank you again for having us, Father and Dorothy. My story began when I was 16 years old, and I was a parishioner at St. Teresa's Parish in Trumbull, and very active in the church. My mother was the go-to person. She was the one that drove the nuns around, and she was the one that did the linens on the altar, and she was proud of it. She felt that everything that we did for the church, we did for God, and that's the way I was brought up. I taught religion ed when I was 12. I started in the very young kids and taught. As I got older, I was in high school. I went to St. Joseph's High School in Trumbull, and I was part of the youth group in our church, and it required a lot of trips. We went on little trips, some to New York City, others away for weekends, and that's when the abuse started for me. Our youth group director was the priest that did abuse me. I didn't tell anyone. I didn't tell my family. I didn't tell my best friends. I was very ashamed, and I was embarrassed by what had happened to me. My sister tells me now that she felt that I was a very sad child. I didn't feel sad. I felt that I was given so much from my parents, and I didn't feel sad, but she said that I was not a happy child, and she never knew why. I didn't tell my siblings either. So it wasn't until I was older that I finally told all of them. I got married. I raised three children in the church. They received all of their sacraments. They were involved in the church with me. We lectured together. My sons and I tag-teamed lecturing. We all taught religious ed, and we went to church every week. We were very devout. I had a tremendous relationship with God, and I never blamed him for anything. The only thing I did was show gratitude toward him and was grateful that he gave me the gifts that he had given me. It wasn't until as I got older that I started to, probably the turning point was the priest that had abused me was on the altar performing confirmations at my nephew's ceremony, and that's when it hit me that this man that abused me could someday be administering the sacrament to my own children, and I couldn't see that happen. So that was probably the catalyst with me. And I started writing letters to the bishops, to the vicar general, to anybody that I hoped would listen to me, including the Pope and the Papal Nuncio, and I never received one response from any of my letters. And subsequent to that, they were never able to find any of my letters, so I don't know where they ended up. But I was brought to, I read the newspapers when it started to come out in the articles in 2001, 2002, and started to see that there were other people out there that were abused, and I wasn't alone. And if there were other people, then we should be doing something to stop this. And that's when I was directed to attorney Paul Tremont's office, where he patiently, he and Cindy Robinson, listened to my story. They were so kind. And they really listened, and that's all I wanted to do, was for somebody to listen to me. And then Dan Tepfer from the Connecticut Post, he sat down with me, and he listened. He was kind. He was wonderful. And then the priest, once all of this came out, that was my rock, was Father Skip Karczynski. And he was the first one to make a phone call to me, and he held my hand, and he allowed me to be me and didn't judge me. And allowed me once again to trust, and he has been my rock since. So that's pretty much my background. Thank you.
Thank you very much for sharing that, Jim.
Sure. My abuse happened when I was 13 years old, shortly after my mother died in a sudden home accident. And the abuse went on for 5 years. And this happened at St. Clement Church in Stamford. We lived literally just up down the street from the parish. And so I was at a vulnerable time in my life. I was looking for connections of support. So, you know, I joined the music ministry at the parish, had a young folk group there. I got a little odd job cleaning the candles, that type of thing. And then eventually my priest abuser had me start taking care of his dog, and then I got lured into the rectory. And then that's, of course, when the physical sexual abuse started. I didn't realize at the time that there was anything really wrong with this, because this was, of course, a very formative time in my life when I myself was wondering about what's male sexuality. Right? How do you express that? How do you experience that in a healthy way? And so here's someone putting an example in front of me that I had no ability to make a judgment as to whether or not this is okay or it's really not okay. I didn't know this until finally I got to college and I realized then, no, this is not okay. And the reason why it's not okay is because the way I'm relating to women. I started actually noticing that in high school, but more so in college. Why was I always having this need to be physically intimate with people I'm just dating? This is not right. So I broke off the relationship with my priest abuser. He died a year and a half after that, while I was still in college. So I didn't really address that. I kept it to myself. I wasn't sure how to process it myself, so I certainly wasn't going to share it with anybody, no family, no friends, nobody. And I finally came to my own kind of not-so-good conclusion that the way to fix this is I need to get married and settle down, right? That'll fix everything. Mm-hmm. Just one woman mm-hmm. committed, have children, which we did. We have three wonderful adult children now, etc. But that marriage imploded after 17 years. And it wasn't until then that I finally realized I was in way over my head, and you know what? I need to talk to a psychologist. And the reason why I talked to a psychologist was about the marriage. all about the marriage. But then finally, after a year and a half, as all this good trust and a lot of good work between the two of us had been built, I said, Deborah, I need to talk to you about something else, something that happened to me when I was a teenager, that I have a pretty good idea now why I have all these trust issues, why I have all these physical intimacy issues, why I have just basic problems with relationships, right? And that's when it began for me. I began to really unpack it. And it was painful to do that, painful to go home to that, to realize I had been abused in a way that just really violated the very core of myself. Mm-hmm. Not a pleasant thing to work with. But then what was really helpful is my psychologist gave me the courage. I found the courage through the relationship we had built and the work we had done to contact the Diocese of Bridgeport. Mm-hmm. And the first person I talked with was Erin Neal. Mm-hmm. And Erin was terrific because she let me express what I needed to express. Even at the time, Bishop William Laurie was there, and he gave me a meeting with him and Erin and others to speak to him very directly about what I had experienced, what I thought the diocese needed to do going forward. And he genuinely interested and genuinely wanted to work to make that a reality. And I know he was for real because he himself was very influential on the composing of the charter that came out in the U.S. Bishops Conference a little over, 15 years ago, I think it is now? Almost 15 years ago. And is really the working document of how the Church tries to move forward to address this issue in a manner so that this will never happen again to anyone. So,
Erin, after 15 years, has it subsided?
I think what we see after 15 years is actually a decrease, certainly in cases. We have had no new credible allegations of current minors, but what we hope is that all abuse victims will come forward, and we hope that increases, which isn't always when the news comes out or the media shows a new person coming forward. It's often after many, many years, and we hope people do that. That's really the expectation, and that's part of our training, is to encourage people to come forward. So we hope that there are no more people that are ever abused or have been, but we also know it's possible there are people who have just not yet been able to have the courage that Jim and that Peggy have had to be able to tell their story so openly and to be able to talk about it.
And unfortunately, we're talking just of the Church here in the United States. You can't go beyond the borders and not know what's happening in South America or in Asian countries in the Catholic Church, which is unfortunate.
Yeah, and I think we're starting to be a little bit more global with this. I think, you know, everyone knows that child sexual abuse exists everywhere. It has since the beginning of time, and it's not new. What we find that's new is people are feeling more confident in talking about it. A show like this or a training about child sexual abuse prevention probably wouldn't be in existence 30 or 40 years ago. It just wasn't talked about, and I think that is a big part of reaching people, is letting people know it is okay to talk about, and it's important to, in a very safe way, even talk to our children about.
Now, Erin, when you came to your position in the diocese, I'm just wondering, what kind of attitude or understanding did you find, and what did you feel you had to bring to it?
I think when we started this, there was just a tremendous reluctance on the part of people who had nothing to do with abuse, that they were just good volunteers, they had helped in the church, they were very just diligent in their responsibilities and couldn't understand maybe their role. When we were asking them to go through a background check or to go through a training, it was really hard for them to make the connection of how asking that of them could help protect children. And I think what we see that's different now is people realize that it is not unique to the Catholic Church. It is something that is a problem in families, in other institutions, public and private, and that they are part of the solution. So understanding more about the problem and being able to talk about it and be able to report instances and know exactly where to report them helps us to not only bring healing, but also to prevent this from ever happening.
Now, as you mentioned, 30 years ago, 40 years ago, be of reticence. So, Jim and Peggy, you know, go back 20 to 30 years ago. If there wasn't an Erin, would you still be caught up in your own?
Gosh, what a good question. I honestly don't know. I have to go back further than 20, 30 years ago, unfortunately. But thank you, Father Ray. That was a compliment. I think that when I did finally reach out, it was through Voice of the Faithful, which is a wonderful organization. They are just people that love their church, and they look at it as their church. They don't look at it as the church belongs to the hierarchy of the church. They run the church. And they had these meetings, and I was invited to a meeting. So it wasn't until I wasn't, I wasn't invited to a meeting. I showed up at a meeting. And I just wanted to
be... That makes more sense to me.
Thanks, Jim. I wanted to be a wallflower. I wanted to sink into the background. And I heard these good people talking, these faith-filled people talking about their God and their church and what can they do to help people that had been abused. And all of a sudden, I found myself putting up my hand and saying, you're doing it. Your awareness is helping me. Mm-hmm. And I was a victim. So that's really what started it for me. So I don't know where I'd be, Father Ray. I don't know. I still would have a wonderful relationship with God, I think, but it probably would end there. And now, Aaron, with Aaron's help, and certainly Jim's and the other survivors, I have found it my passion or mission to find other people that are hurting that haven't had the advantage that Jim and I have to meet Aaron.
Yeah. Well, which I think, if you don't mind, Aaron, this brings me back to, if anyone's listening who needs to speak to you, how do they reach
you? Sure, absolutely.
Or, you know, safe environments.
So we have a dedicated cell phone that is a direct line to my number is 203-650-3265, and we also have a victim assistance counselor whose name is Michael Tintrup, and you can reach him on his cell phone at 203-241-0987. And we also encourage anyone who feels that there's a new incident of abuse to always feel that they should contact the police and contact DCF, because it really needs to go through that process. It is important. It's difficult to do. That's part of when someone comes forward, that's what we'll ask to see if that has ever happened, to make sure that an incident can be thoroughly investigated if possible. So that is an important part of that step.
So if what happened to Jim, what happened to Peggy, they come to you now, it really becomes a police matter, too. It's a criminal matter.
We include the police in our notifications. In many occasions, they can't do anything because the criminal statute has run out, so there is no ability for them to do much with this. But we still give this information over to them, and we do it within 12 hours of becoming aware of it. That's not just a commitment, but it's actually a mandate. It's a law in Connecticut that anyone who is working with children, social workers, members of the clergy, that we're obligated to report to civil authorities within 12 hours of becoming aware. And we do that whether that incident occurred recently or many, many years ago.
Do you have, I know you have Virtus program for all people, and let's say as a priest, I just took that program. Now, do you ever have any kind of, maybe come through Virtus, but I'm trying to think of myself, you know, I said, my gosh, when I was first ordained, I'm 25 years old, I'm back in the parish where I went to grammar school, I'm involved with the grammar school kids, I spent years and years and years with high school students, and I love it, I'm Italian, so I was very tactile, and then, you know, and even now kids come up and hug you all the time, and now I'm feeling kind of, I don't want to give impression that, no, really, I don't want to get angry, but the sense of, I mean, I'm just wondering if you deal with priests in general or religious in general who really feel a little awkward now about just being kind and caring. And
that's right. That's very much what we talk about, and our policies are intended to not just protect children, but also the adults who work with them.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of what we give them are skills to still be kind and loving and caring with children, but at the same time having really safe, solid boundaries with them so that there's no misperception. There's no way for someone to be falsely accused with this. And one of the ways that we encourage a real safe interaction is making sure there's multiple adults that are present mm-hmm. at all times when children are around. So if you gave a child a shoulder-to-shoulder hug or a high five mm-hmm. or a handshake or any type of physical contact, there's always a witness to that, so that there is never even the perception of anything inappropriate.
Mm-hmm. We also, I'm wondering, especially to you, Jim, now, when you were in the, you actually went to the seminary for a year.
I was.
And you found yourself being involved with some co-ed somewhere, right?
That's right.
Now, I'm almost saying applauding you and saying how great it was that you did not say, and go through the 8 years and end up being perhaps a troubled priest. But you almost did what you hoped a seminarian would do.
Yeah. Well, ironically, in that situation, my spiritual director, which was a great sister, Helen Donahue, along with the rector at the time, Tony Lobo, really begged me to come back for a second year because they said, you are exactly in the place where you need to be, which is you understand how much you're in over your head. You understand that you've got a very serious issue you need to deal with. That's exactly the kind of honesty that we're looking for. But I said, no, I really appreciate it, guys, but I just realize I'm way too immature, and I don't want to risk ever being a scandal to the church and God that I love. So I left. And then I fixed this by getting married within 3 years after that, because I figured, this is how I'll fix my, my meandering among women and acting inappropriately. I'm just going to get married. And then all the rest that I shared.
But isn't it that what we all do, we put a lid on our problems and don't want to face them and just say and walk away from them? But
At times when someone is encouraging us to, yes, you're right there, you're on the door. Don't be afraid to go and up against that electrified fence. It's exactly what you need to do. And there are others who want to help you to do that. You don't have to do it alone.
I think that comes, I guess, is there a certain getting over kind of a sense of wanting to protect the corporation, wanting to protect people you may know, friends? You know, I often think about that. You know, you may sit at home watching TV and saying, boy, oh boy, they should just execute these people right in the main square, you know? And yet I say, you know, what would happen like if your son or daughter came home and said, I just abused a kid? Would you run to the phone and call the police right away? Or what would your reaction be? So there's almost like a sense of saying, we have to take that responsibility of saying, if something has happened that is really wrong, you're not going to do any favor to anyone by simply saying, well, let me just, you know, protect you and, you know, you won't do that again. Well, yeah, no, of course not. And I guess if there's a message you'd like to give to, I guess, to the church and or to the other abusers, I guess what would it be that you want to share as far as relating to the reality of what's happening and doing something positively about it?
I will answer that question, but I feel remiss in not recognizing another whole avenue of this, and that is the wonderful, wonderful priests that have had to withstand this terrible scandal and had absolutely nothing to do with it. And they are the reason, Father Ray, that you might be hesitant when it comes to hugging a child or allowing someone to a child to hug you. And there are just so, they have been victimized as well, all of these good priests. So I'll let Jim answer that last question.
Yeah, I'm sorry, you just say the question again, Father.
Well, I guess when I say how to overcome, let's say, a natural tendency to want to protect a loved one or protect a friend when you know really you're not protecting them by trying to somehow make this go away rather than dealing with it.
Yeah, this is a tough one because obviously, especially since we've been through the extraordinary Jubilee Year of Mercy, we have in our minds mercy, right? But the best mercy we can show somebody is trying to help them to face the truth of whatever it is that they have to deal with, which is not easy, especially this, because this is just so painful. And this is what I understand in my journey, and especially since we've been working together here in the diocese as survivor groups since January of 2016, is that this is such a painful thing to go home to, that we'd rather not deal with it if we don't have to. And so that's a tough nut to get around. Again, it's like an electrified fence that people mm-hmm. don't want to go to, but mm-hmm. they need to go to. Why? Because it's not just about you. It's about you and so many others who mm-hmm. are vulnerable. So again, remind yourself, if I don't deal with this in truly a truthful way, in helping this individual to go home to the truth of what they've done, and really, you know, get the help that they need, let whatever, you know, society's judgment needs to play out about this, etc., law enforcement, etc., I'm not doing anybody any favors. In fact, I am putting future people at risk that I have no right to do.
Mm-hmm.
Because really, in my heart of hearts, I know that I want to protect people.
Well, when you think about this, it just kind of, your heart melts and everything melts on the floor here, having it, doing this program. But I'm so incredibly thankful to both of you for being here and being involved in the show and sharing your story. You just see how the effects are. You know, I mean, I don't have two young kids sitting in front of me. I have, you know, adults and midlife, and they've let this this reality has affected your lives all along the way. And thank goodness. Erin, thank you, dear.
Thank you.
I know you both is here. But, you know, so much good is being done, thank goodness, because the problem is one that I know probably won't go away, and but certainly can be minimized. Countless people can be saved. Countless people can be helped. And we hope that, you know, we could do something about that. Well, one of the things we're doing about that is a particular mass is coming up in October, and I'd like us to, you know, maybe share what is happening there. And are you involved in it particularly, or just Peggy?
We are. We sat down with the bishop very early on, and Erin, and developed this program. It started last year. What we chose not to have a mass. This year, we are having a mass. And we do have witnesses speaking at these. Jim and myself mm-hmm. will witness, and there are also two other survivors who will witness at this mass. We invite the clergy. We want to show them. We want to reach out that olive branch. We are on the same team. We need to rebuild this bridge that has been destructed, and that's what this mass is all about. It's on October 29th. It is in Fairfield at 2 p.m. on a Sunday afternoon, and the bishop will be celebrating the mass, and the bishop's he's been sincerely remorseful about this, and he is just wonderful to listen to him as well.
Okay, well, incredibly, we ended this program. We could do 42 programs, I'm sure. But I'd like to thank Jim DeVasso and also Peggy Fry for being with us and sharing your stories, and God bless you both.
Thank you for listening, Father and Dorothy. No. Thank you.
And Erin Neal, who does a phenomenal job and an incredible work for the diocese in working on safe environments and victim abuse. Erin, thank you so much.
Thank you. It's a privilege.
And I'm glad you were here. And to our listeners, I know we can't give phone numbers yet again, but just to wish, tell you, go to your local parish. They'll guide you. And so we'd like to thank you, all of you, for being with us today. Have a very good week, and God bless.